Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrn, a potpourri of podcasts by me, veterinary ethologist Myrn Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed. When I was in college, I took a course that the professor opened by saying, "And God created man, and man returned the favor." This was his way of saying that religions more often reflect the views of the individuals who created them than they do any actual higher being. Although he was referring strictly to religions, there's more than enough evidence to make it clear that we humans like to play God in all kinds of different areas. Most certainly, we like to play God when it comes to animals. The plight of endangered species can be traced to our playing God with the environment, our belief that we're omniscient and omnipotent, and that we can do whatever we want to the planet, and it doesn't matter. The power is ours. But relative to my work, I'm more interested in the God-playing role as it affects domestic animals. I'm not going to start a tirade here about purebred animals and how they reflect God playing at the extreme. Instead, I want to look at the origins of domestic animals, human and non-human alike. For decades, we've had studies about the effect of domestication on animals, but it's only been recently that scientists have started to look at the same process in humans. And not surprisingly, the same thing occurs. That thing is referred to as neoteny. And neoteny is a sort of umbrella term that describes the range of physiologically and behaviorally immature characteristics that differentiate all of us domestic animals from our wild ancestors. One of these characteristics explored in humans is the larger human brain. Our larger brain has always been marketed as evidence of our superiority. It's our larger brain that makes us worthy of ruling the earth, or so the party line goes. In reality, though, it turns out that that larger brain is a function of neoteny. Because the window for the development of brain cells remains open longer in humans than in chimps, more growth occurs. But this got me thinking, why? Why do humans need a bigger brain? I know the party line. The party line is kind of reverse logic that we need this bigger brain because we develop things like iPods and hybrid cars and weapons of mass destruction. But that kind of reasoning doesn't make sense to me. I look at this bigger brain and it's like, okay, why do we need it? What makes us different from a perceptual standpoint? And to me, the answer to that is that it's our fragility. We are extremely fragile. And it's the fact that we are so poorly adapted to any one climate that makes it possible for us to live just about anywhere, but only if we have the intellectual capacity to create an artificial cocoon to wrap around ourselves to enable us to do so. We've also lost our sensory perceptions compared to our ancient ancestors. Other mammals live in the realm of what we humans consider extrasensory perception. We're real clunkers in the sensory department. Because of that, we have to compensate. We have to come up with ways to make ourselves feel part of the environment. We lost our sense of smell. Well, let's surround ourselves with a cloak of perfume and cologne, aftershave, scented deodorant, shampoo. Make it really strong so we can pretend that our olfactory sense is intact. Turn up the music. Make it louder. Make it louder and louder and louder to make us feel like we belong. Forget the lightest touch. We want more. More, more, more. And so all of our technology reflects a need to create the illusion that we have the same sensory perceptions as our ancient ancestors. We look at our dogs, and there are certainly some breeds, you can see it right in them, that they're becoming more immature, their skulls are becoming more domed, their muzzles are becoming shorter. And this makes me wonder, are their brains becoming bigger? Now, I know a lot of people who will say that the purebreds are becoming dumber, and that's why they're getting into more problems. But I don't know. Now, if their skulls are getting more domed, I doubt that there's just dead space in there. Their brains must be getting bigger, too. And I wonder if it's their higher brain centers. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me. Would it surprise you? They've got a sensory problem, too. Look at our dogs. Look at our cats. But especially our dogs, since we've had the longest relationship with them. It seems to me, if you took an animal with the wild dog's sensory perception and put that animal in the average Western household with its mind-numbing collage of sensations, that animal would be in trouble. It seems to me that the most successful animals in that particular environment would be those who were perceptually number. They either wouldn't perceive or wouldn't react to a lot of those sensations. Simultaneously, they would need to know how to manipulate that environment in order to achieve behavioral and physiological stability. So in some ways, they would be dumber, or actually number, but in other ways, they'd be smarter. Not unlike us. And like us, they would also be more fragile. And it seems to me that's exactly where we are.
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Katova Arts, www.katova.com.